8 a.m. in New York, 2 p.m. in Johannesburg, and 7 p.m. in Bangkok. Welcome to the Expat Happy Hour. This is Sunday Shenander Bean from sundaybean.com, and I'm a solution-oriented coach and intercultural strategist for individuals and organizations. And I am on a mission to help you adapt and succeed when living abroad and get you through any life transition. What can you do as a parent to support your global kid as they leave the nest and go off on their own? How can you help your third culture kid focus on a smooth transition to life at a university in a country they've never lived in? How can you support your own kids deal with the grief and loss of community when they step away from the international group and face the world on their own? What can I do to help as my third culture kids come of age? These are just some of the questions that keep parents of global kids, cross-cultural kids, third culture kids up at night. And that is why I'm so excited to welcome our special guest from Intercultural Transitions, Dr. Hannah Morris. Dr. Morris is an international educator and global nomad who's passionate about assisting others as they navigate their own intercultural transitions. Welcome to Expat Happy Hour, Anna.
Thank you for having me.
So let me tell a little bit more about Hannah. Hannah is really cut out perfectly for what she does. She combines her professional experience in college admissions and international education with her research in higher education and intercultural learning to help students, families, and schools around the globe in their own cross-cultural transition. So Hannah has worked with students from over 60 nationalities and 9 countries and counting, right, Hannah?
Yes, and the 9 countries is actually how many places I've actually taken students abroad. So when you start to get creative of my students around the world, and Skype and all of that, those numbers grow exponentially.
I'm sure. And the last time I saw you, we were in The Hague, right? So now I'm calling in from South Africa and you're calling in from Canada, I believe.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So Hannah, you obviously have the professional background, which enables you to support students as they, you know, make the transition to life after primary school, after high school, and onto university or other things. But tell us, how did you get to do this professionally? Were you a third culture kid? Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So I was a cross-cultural kid, daughter of a third culture kid. So my family is military, multi-generation. And I, at a young age, learned about moving and reinventing myself. And I always joke that I was the walking advertisement. I had no shame to walk into a playground and say, "Hi, I'm Hannah. I just moved here. Let's play." And so I started working with exchange students very young because of my parents' global lifestyles as children. I knew that there were these needs and these challenges that I could help be, you know, be that welcome. And I started that in high school, being a high school exchange host. And in college, I got very, very involved. And that helped lead to my career at the University of Florida, where I was working with our incoming international students, outgoing exchange students, teaching first year programming, which is college success courses. And it was just, I don't want to say luck, because really, as we just spoke about, you start to find yourself surrounding yourself with the things that make you happy and where you bring, you know, good to the world. And so I found that within these globally mobile communities.
I just have chills up my arms, because that always happens when something really powerful is said. And it sounds like you just really followed, you extended what you were growing up with as a child and just professionalized that as you went, in terms of your skills and the confidence that you had on the playground to go up to someone and say hi. It sounds like you translated that into your career specialization.
Yes. And I feel really lucky that this is where I get to be. And, you know, when I went to university, I had not been on that campus since I was 4 years old. did not go to a tour, and I actually accidentally missed orientation because of a mistake at the admissions office. So I showed up that first day the way an international student would, just fresh. I just happened to be lucky that it was my own home culture, but I still hadn't been there in so many years. So I very much understand what a lot of these students went through, because I went through it myself, and my partner Megan also went through it herself. So we really understand the importance of our work.
So I'm going to tell a little bit about your business partner, Megan, and what you do through the boutique consultancy firm of Intercultural Transitions, for those of you who aren't familiar. So Hannah and Megan are this powerful team at Intercultural Transitions, where their mission is to prepare globally mobile students for success in college and beyond. And what they do is they work one-to-one with students and do career coaching, and also work with parents. That's what I love about it. And if you have listened to episode 59 of Expat Happy Hour, you'll remember Megan Norton and I talking about third cultural kids, transcultural kids, and how the importance of them forming a sense of identity and belonging, and what that means even before adulthood. So if you haven't checked out episode 59, you can learn more about third culture kids or cross-cultural kids and the idea of identity and belonging. And that is such a great complement to what we're going to talk about today. And Hannah, you're part of a 6-part interview series. And the whole series is about talking about the less than talked about aspects of expat life. And one of the things that you and I have agreed on is that there just isn't enough out there talking about how parents can support their third culture kids coming of age.
Correct. And when you look at the books out there, there's so few. Tina Quick wrote an amazing book, The Global Nomad's Guide to University Transition. But there's not enough conversation about this until problems start happening in early 20s. And then you start to see the parents kind of almost the reactionary stage. And what we're trying to have are proactive conversations. Let's build the resilience and have those conversations now while they're still young and at home.
So what does that mean, the transition? So for people who are, university would be like after grade 12, correct, right? So when are we talking, when do we have to start thinking about this transition time?
So Megan actually brings up in hers that these are conversations that can start with young elementary school, primary school children, because a lot of these conversations are based on how does your student learn? Where are they finding that they grow and they feel that belonging and that safety? And if we start to have those conversations early, it actually helps those secondary students have those conversations because they have the language for it, right? Mm-hmm. The same way we should have language for emotions, we should be having language for how do we contribute to the community around us? How do we learn? What did we like about school today, right? But when we start to talk with students at the secondary, we usually start to talk to them at about 14, 15 years old, right? Especially if they're mm-hmm. in an A-levels program, they're deciding on what A-levels they might be taking. They're really focusing their courses, and they're focusing those course studies based on what they think they will be doing after graduation. And a lot of times in our globally mobile lifestyles, parents just assume something that the children are not on the same page.
I'm giggling because I'm thinking about my own family where, you know, we're raising binational kids in a third cultural context. So of course we're thinking of, you know, where would we like our kids to go to school, university? And where are they going to want to go? And that we can't predict that right now, right? That's something we can't know. So what I'm hearing is that the ideal approach is to start even in younger elementary, talking about the learning, the growing, the belonging, the safety, building those blocks. And then it gets really serious thinking about the transition around 14. And what I'm hearing is that we can be having conversations with our students or our young teens at that age as a parent. What kind of conversations should we be having?
Well, I think some of the big ones are really, where do the students start to see themselves, right? Where are they finding that belonging? A lot of times students will be going back home to, let's say, grandma every summer, and that's great. And so the parents say, well, you go back, quote unquote, home every summer. And the student will actually say, but that doesn't feel like home. That feels like your mother's house. And I love my grandmother, but that's her house and it doesn't really feel like mine. And this especially will pop up often when students are in a system. So the American system, the Australian system, the Korean system for schooling, right? But if they're not from that culture, they're walking, you know, they're really living that third culture life, you know, living in a household in a different community, but going to school in a third community. And that they'll start to say, well, you know, my education has all really been setting me up to go to this system in the end. And this is where I feel my academic skills are really, you know, honed and challenged. And, you know, something I think is really important is if your child is an example of that, they might not have the academic language to go back to the country that you're from and be successful in that first year. If you've never taken a high level biology in your native language, they don't have those words because those are technical terms that you don't use at the kitchen table.
Right. And I think there's a couple of things that are going on for me as I listen to this. One is, I mean, I'll just be really transparent. My son is going to turn 10. So we're about 4 years, you know, behind this, you know, time marker. So my approach as a parent might change, but there is already a paradigm shift for me as a parent, with young kids of, they're going to have agency in deciding what they're going to do, right? And I think as parents, we often put ourselves under pressure of we need to guide, we need to tell them. And what I'm hearing, and what I've heard from Megan, and what I've heard from you, is really creating conversations early on where the children have a voice and can speak for where they feel comfortable and where they see themselves going.
Exactly. And what we always say, especially to be respectful of cultures across the board, where some cultures are very more parents say, children do cultures, and we want to be respectful within that. But we always say is what we want to do is give your children the language and the ability to participate in the conversation. At the end of the day, at 10 or at 14, the answer is still not their answer. It still is mom and dad's, or, you know, the parents and the families. But at least having them start to understand the thought process and what do we think about when we start to consider these things. And that, if students do that, you know, younger, obviously with simple language, they start to do that in secondary as they start to graduate. These are the same thought processes they do when choosing a job, choosing who to date, right? Like, these are some of the same holistic conversations we want to be instilling in our children.
So tell us what I'm hearing now during this transition time. We have to start pay attention between 14, 15. Very concretely, if I did three things well once my kids turn 14 and 15 to help prepare them during this transition time, what should I do?
First, help them understand who they are. What is that belonging that Megan talks about? What is the mix of cultures that they identify with, right? So instead of saying you are a this religion from a this country, start to have the conversations of which traditions do you love celebrating, right? Because that's where that belonging and that identity comes from. So the first thing that we see with third culture kids is that they often lack the language to talk about who they are, which is really problematic when you start to ask them to apply to university and write a who are you, why are you going to university essay.
Thank you for making that connection, because what I'm hearing is we need to have the language of who they are, right? And the complexity of who they are because of this, you know, transcultural life. And you've just made the crossover for me, because when, not only just from an identity perspective and a security in their own self, it's also very practical when they're entering into the university application phase so that they can articulate that. So thank you. That's very concrete. What's the next thing?
The next thing is really understanding what values they bring to the world around them, what skills they bring, how are they engaging with the world around them? And I know that sounds really silly, but a lot of times in these international school settings, students start to use language that say, oh, I'm good at this, I'm bad at this. But what it might just be is, I don't learn well in a math class like the school I'm attending, but we're attending the school because this is our option as a family, right? We're doing the best we can with what we've got. But having those conversations, because a lot of times students start to box themselves off on what they have to bring value to the world. And, you know, they don't see, because they've had these very cut up, you know, existences in their life, right? There were the 2 years here, the 4 years there, especially with students that have moved in once they're in high school or secondary school, they start to lack how they interact with the world around them. So really helping them draw those lines and bring that all together, because that's how they start to say, I want to study history in university because I've noticed that every time we go to a new place, Mom, it's me that says, we have to go do this on Saturday and learn about this new place, and help them see that in themselves. They often lack that perspective because they see their lives as, you know, 2 or 3 year pieces.
So how do we do that? Like pragmatically, how do I help my child really start to see their values and skills?
So another reason it's important, just to bring it back, is when they're applying to university or applying to that first job, they have to have a resume or activities list. So they actually have to put this together at 16, 17 years old. Help them do that. We are very blind to our whole beings, right? This is why we have friends and we build communities and we ask our friends for feedback. That same thing needs to happen with them. If you sat a student down and said, write out your resume, they would include maybe 20% of what they actually do, right? Because they don't see their contribution to their community or to the responsibilities within their family as important things to add to their resume. And as you and I both know, as tandem nomads, those are very important in our global lifestyle. And so that's a really great way to, of course, help them with their university application, but also over the dinner table, have conversations on, you know, I noticed you didn't write this about how you dog sit for the neighbors. That's a really important thing that you do. You're earning a little bit of money. You're showing that you have responsibility. You love animals and taking care of them and helping them see that.
You know, it's interesting. There's a real crossover to what I do with my clients. I have a program called Year of Transformation, where I work with individuals throughout a whole year to help them understand what they really want, and then find out what's that thing, that either that job or that project or business that they create. And one of the things that we do is exactly that, that they list all of their skills and abilities. And what you said is they get stuck. They'll mention like 3 or 4 things. And then when you ask their friends or their partner, the list is really long. So what I'm hearing you say is that same strategy that I work with my clients works for teens at this time. And what I see happening is, I just did a podcast which talks about the difference between self-worth and self-confidence. When you're able to have confidence in your abilities and your skills, that's where your self-confidence goes up. When you know those are the things I can do. And that would probably help a high school student aim higher in their application process if they feel more confident about it.
Absolutely. And you're probably not surprised to hear that a lot of my career, because I was really lucky at the University of Florida, has been in career development and helping students with internship and full-time job placement. So this is all based on that same literature and that same empowerment, really, right? It's so much of that is confidence and empowerment and letting them see they are more than just a child of a ex-corporate diplomat missionary that moves around the world.
Yeah. And what I love about that is that you're starting early. I mean, the women that I work with that do this specifically, that I'm thinking of, they're between 35 and 45 and are doing this for the first time. And so it's great if you can start this skill building of how do I see what I do that has value and how do I articulate that to others that will serve your child for decades. So I love that. So that's the second thing. The first one, we talked about how to help them understand the mix of cultures that they are and being able to create language for that. The second one, we talked about really nailing down your values and skills. What's the third one?
Helping them grieve and leave well. You know, celebrate, not just grieve, right? I think we're so used to using that term because of Ruth and Pollock's, you know, great work, but helping them know that it is okay to be sad, to see this life that they've known, kind of walk away from it because they're walking onto something great, but to celebrate that, to do those important thank yous, you know, and students are starting that young now. Thankfully, families are starting to instill those traditions of leaving well, but please help your children leave well. It's very important for a successful transition to university.
I think, you know, I think that's really interesting to emphasize because when you're a parent and you're working through your own transition. And it's so easy to get caught up in your own grief and just try to scrape by in your own leaving, that it's easy that the kids, because they seem to be so adaptive and have been so adaptive, how you could forget that the parents are there as a really strong support to leave well. So that's a good reminder to create space to help them to leave well. And I'm guessing that starts, you know, that of course starts early, early elementary, as soon as this global rotational life begins, so that then it's normal and natural when they get to university. But what about, you know, my children, for example, at the dinner table, when we say, well, where would you like to go next? And if the city of Bern, where, you know, where we lived and where he was born comes up, my son says, no, not Bern. I've been to all the places there. I want to go somewhere new. How about Southeast Asia? Right. And so for him, going somewhere familiar is not something he looks forward to. So what about the third culture kids or transcultural kids who are wishing they would go somewhere yet again different, but are having to go to somewhere where it feels more monocultural and not as international as I grew up in?
Absolutely. And that's common because of the financial reasons and, you know, other just logistical reasons. Sometimes parents say, you know what, this is our limitations. And it's important that families have that conversation. We have financial, we have other limitations. You know, you can go to New Zealand, right? But it's going to cost X amount of money for you to fly home for any time. That's going to limit your ability to come home, right? So have those conversations, parents. Like, there are limitations. It is not a one-way conversation. You really need to make sure that you have that. But for those students, there are ways to find little communities still, right? So we talk about when we're searching for university, one, obviously looking at the percentage of international applicants, but going past that, saying, what countries are they coming from? Is it going to be 90% from just one country? Or are they really coming from a global environment? Go talk to the International Center. If you email an International Center and ask these questions and say, hi, I'm a globally mobile student, they're going to want you to be one of their International Student Ambassadors one day, right? So they want to have those conversations with a student. And so these are the conversations, you know, don't look at just rankings alone. Rankings don't tell you how you're going to do within that university environment. So there are ways to find these global communities that we have grown to love and flourish in. When we start to think about, you know, university, or even, you know, we do work with a lot of students that don't go to university. They go vocational, or they go gap year, or family responsibilities. And there are ways to find those communities. We just encourage you to be proactive about that.
Yep. And what I'm hearing, so one, having a really honest conversation around the limitations financially, or also what that means around spending time with the family if you are far away. Having those conversations, also looking beyond just rankings, getting into the details of what the international student population looks like, so you can immerse yourself continually into an international environment and still feel like you're at home. So tell me, we were talking briefly about invisible migrants. Can you tell me more what that is and what we should look out for?
So there is a great, and again, Megan does the best at this, but there's a great way to kind of look at how do we move to a new place. And often when we move within our global world, we kind of look like we don't belong, which can actually help us, right? People tend to give us a little bit more time and space. If we don't have the language right, they go, oh, well, this person doesn't belong here. Let me help, right?
Right.
There's also this idea, there's four quadrants, but the opposite of that is when you look the part, but the inside of you, you don't feel the part. So you're still struggling the way you would in a new place, but no one understands that because they look at you and say, but you belong here. Why don't you know the word? And that is very common when students go to their quote unquote passport or home country for university or gap year, because they don't have that kind of leeway. They don't have that extra help that someone who doesn't look the part might be getting. And it can be very shocking, because if these conversations don't happen, they don't know that this is what's going to happen, right? Like, if a conversation that parents can do at the dinner table is to actually talk about their own challenges. You know, I know I grew up in Bern, but when I go back, I always forget which train to get on. And it can feel so silly. But admitting to that helps the student say, oh, you know what? That happens sometimes, and that's okay. This is a part of the process. But what happens is there's these chips that kind of build on shoulders, right? A student will say, I've missed 7 times. I understand it. I'm going to be fine.
Right. That's the most dangerous thing, right? Yeah. when you're not anticipating it, you know, it makes me think about when I had lived in Switzerland for 4.5 years, and then I moved to the US for my master's degree. And I remember getting there and I introduced myself and told them, you know, where I was from North Dakota. And people were like, what do you mean you're from North Dakota? I'm like, yeah. And they were like, you have a European accent. they didn't think I sounded like I was from the US. And things would happen with my students when I was teaching where they would say things and I had no idea what that meant, like OC and he's so emo. And I would ask him these questions and they would look at me like I was from outer space because I looked like I was from there and they knew I was born and raised, you know, in the US, but I just wasn't up to speed on things. And that can take you off guard. If you're having a day where you're not feeling like you should belong, but you don't belong, those things can throw you off. So same thing with cultural reentry shock, prepare your kids to say that this could happen and that's okay. And I'm also hearing from you, a great strategy is to share your own stories so that there's normalization around it and there's preparation around it.
Yeah, sharing your own stories. We also recommend students reach out to alumni from their high school, from their secondary school and say, you know, can you give me some examples of what it was like for you? You'll start to hear that also. And I think that this is where those first 2 points, identity and kind of understanding your skills and what you bring to the world, are really important, because identity helps them have the language to say, well, I know I look like I'm from this country, but let me give you a few seconds to explain while I'm kind of confused right now. And it helps them really have that vocabulary. But it also, when you start to think of how do they make friends, right? Because that's a big point, is students in the international communities make friends different from most domestic students. And we can talk about that in a second. But a way to overcome that is to find the organizations and the clubs or the part-time jobs where you do feel that kind of belonging and that you're giving back to the world around you. And that's where you start to create relationships and form support groups, which we really need, especially when we're, you know, late teenagers going to university for the first time.
And I'm guessing there's also a danger where, and I know everybody has different strategies, but I'm guessing there's a danger with third culture kids where the chameleon effect, where you go in, you blend in, right? Go in, blend in, go in, blend in terms of doing like they do. And that could be a real danger if you, let's say you've lived abroad your whole life and then you return to your home, your passport country. You try to blend in, but actually people were never given the opportunity to learn that you aren't just like them, right? Even though the accent sounds like it and you can pick up, you know, what they're talking about quickly, that you're actually erasing.
Yes.
You know, core experiences and identity by blending in.
And so something we always suggest with that, and an easy example for a lot of students around the world is, you know, you might have started picking up Chinese New Year, right? It's a wonderful celebration if you've had a friend or maybe an IE or someone close to your family who celebrates it. It might be something, or maybe you lived obviously in a country that celebrates it. That is part of who you are, right? Every early, you know, late winter, early spring, you start to look forward to the celebrations. You go to a university that doesn't, you know, most people aren't from there. You're not going to find it. But actually going out and saying, this is an important part of me. Let me go find the Chinese Student Association. Let me go down to the Chinese Cultural Center in town and ask if they have any celebrations. You know, actually helping students know that they can search these pieces of themselves out, because we don't want them to have that identity loss, to hide that part of them that has always celebrated this away because they don't know how to bring it to their new life. Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's, that also goes back to the role as a parent, especially in binational relationships when you're living in a third culture, that if you're, for example, with our family, we have American traditions, we have Swiss traditions. We also have traditions that we, you know, learn to cherish in Burkina Faso. So how do you, we as parents with young kids also teach them how important traditions are. So no matter how commercial Valentine's Day is, on Valentine's Day, I'll cut out a piece of red cardboard, you know, or something, nothing, you know, expensive, but just something really simple so that I say, this is something I grew up with. And I think that's one thing we can do as parents is also teach the importance of traditions early on so that they also learn how to do that in creative ways, right? Adaptive ways when they get older.
Exactly. And something that we always caution parents against is when a student will say, I'm from X country. And the parent will say, no, no, you're from my country. Mm-hmm. You lived there. Mm-hmm. And we always say, no, we don't have to always use these very explicit black, white, you know, on off description. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can help because that's the quickest way that a student will start or a child will start shutting down. And then again, when they get to this identity formation, they go, well, my mom's always said I'm this, but I don't feel it. And when I go back, you know, I don't know what that means. And Megan has a great example that I love. Megan went back to university in the United States where she'd never really lived. And they said, where are you from? And she'd say, America. And they'd all look at her and go, yeah, we know. I love that she shares this example with students because in the international school setting, we say our country, right? Could you imagine going back to your country and that being your answer?
Right. Well, my son, I got a school report back when he was in third grade and I read it and it was about your hometown. And my son was born in Bern, Switzerland and lived there for the first 5 years. And I was reading the report about his hometown and it said Williston, North Dakota, where I was born. And I was like, what? Like on an official school report. And I realized he had, you know, we go back there every summer and that's where my parents are and grandma and grandpa are. And he sees that as a home for him. And I just like took a picture of it and sent it to my husband and said, guess where our son was born? but I really tried to just let that go because I did see that as a way of him saying, I am creating an identity as a North Dakotan actually, rather than a Bernese. And you have to give him that space. And yeah, what is there to lose actually?
And I think it's important that as they start to get older, especially this is later, maybe right before they go on to university, but a struggle I know I had because I was a military brat, Florida is where I'm from. And so I would tell people the place I was born and then they'd start to go, oh, you know, oh, I'm from around there. And I'd say, oh yes, you know, because I did the same thing, spent summers with grandma. Mm-hmm. I know the restaurants and the playgrounds. And then they'd say, oh, so which high school did you go to? I'd have to back up and say, well, I graduated high school in Wisconsin. And then, you know, they'd kind of give you that look. So having those conversations and just saying, you know what, this is different. You're not unique in any way, right? You're an international student the way anyone else at your school is, but you're unique as a human. And all humans have to kind of start to understand where they're from. For some people, it might be easier, but for some people, it's a little more complicated and that's okay. Just kind of having those conversations earlier, you know, obviously very simply, but then later helping them understand that the world around them is not always going to be like their globally mobile community.
So what should we, what do we have to lose if we don't pay attention to this? You know, assume that, you know, half the people who are listening are going to go on with their busy lives and get consumed with the everyday and they don't take action or are not mindful. What is there to lose?
Well, Ruth Henriken and the Pollocks, Michael, really highlight the trajectory of, and they really do talk about adult third culture kids and what happens. And then again, I think I referenced it earlier, but I'll say it again, Tina Quick's book, The Global Nomad's Guide to University Transition is another great book, both good resources for parents to understand what happens, right? So for all of us who have lived abroad, moved once, moved even not even abroad, maybe across your country to a different dialect or area, you know what the challenges are. And you know that there are higher rates of, you know, mental health issues and just, you know, you need more support. You know that there's kind of that loss of belonging, that unresolved grief. And you know how that manifests, right? We've seen it with either within ourselves or within our communities. This is happening to third culture kids when they go to university for a few reasons. One, it's the first time they're doing this without the family unit. So your child can be amazing at doing, you know, these transitions, but they've always had you. Mm. Now they don't have you. And then the second, you know, your child might be used to something that they don't realize. So now that, you know, they've showed up with these expectations and they're about to not be met.
Yeah.
And then third, if your child's going back and being that invisible migrant that we talked about, they're not getting help from the international center because mm-hmm. they're not seen as international students. So all of that extra support, transition support help that a university might have put together is missing your child.
Yeah.
And so there's so many, there's higher rates of, you know, depression. Mm-hmm. You'll see often a dip in grades.
Anxiety.
If you have an equatorial student most of your life, right? You've lived around the equator. You know what it's like to be in the north of the northern hemisphere.
Right.
November, where, you know, mm-hmm. if you're Canadian or, you know, from the US, you have an important family holiday called Thanksgiving. You have midterms happening in October, exams happening in December, and there's 4.5 hours of sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
You know yeah. what happens, right? But it's, think of that, plus mom or dad being, you know, 7 hours away via time zones, 23 hours away via flights, and we have just like compiled it all on. And and then you know what happened. So there are a lot of great reasons to have these conversations early and to be more proactive.
And what I want to also say at the same time, it's something I took away from the adult third culture kid panel in The Hague at the Family and Global Transition Conference, that even if as parents, we do all of this from A to Z, we have those conversations, we, you know, help our children build their skills. One thing I think it's really important that parents who are listening realize is everyone has their own journey, and your child even will also need to process their own identity and belonging into teens and adulthood, early adulthood, and later in life. And it still might be hard. So it's not saying that if you tick all the boxes, your kids are going to be fine, right? It's about we can do what we can to support and trust that we're teaching the skills so that they can do their own work as they get older.
Exactly.
It's not all of our job.
I'll highlight one thing that's important that we haven't talked about yet, but searching for that mentorship, helping students know that there's a community out there of students who have also faced the same challenges. And mm-hmm. so Megan, when she brought together that panel at FIGT, brought together other people who have had experiences like her as they've come to age as third culture kids, and being able to find that community, whether it's online, whether we did highlight, you know, talking to an alumni from a high school or secondary school, but helping students understand who they are, right? Being able to label themselves as a third culture kid or globally mobile helps them create those relationships and those strong support networks and find that mentorship that even when it does get rough because they're on their own journey, they have somewhere to turn.
Right. That is such an excellent piece. And I'm really glad that you brought that up. Tell us, Hannah, you know, what are you and Megan up to right now? Where can people find you if they would like more support with their own, you know, coming of age TCKs and how to help them with university?
Well, we are based right now in the United States, but I moved to Khartoum, Sudan in a few months. So we're really a globally based organization. Our nonprofit, we're working right now with a lot of international schools. We specifically work with a lot of counselors to help them implement more of this programming in and kind of bring these conversations to the entire school community, because that's what we're trying to do right now is elevate the conversation, make this the norm for when we talk about coming of age as a third culture kid. And we do some private consulting. We're happy to work with families on either a one-off basis or through the college or career transition to be mentors within that also. And you can find us online at interculturaltransitions.org. We're also on Facebook, and we like to share a lot of posts and You know, when we're going to come to your neighborhood, we travel a lot. So that's how we saw you in The Hague. We're always going to post that so we can come speak to, we speak to a lot of community groups and just kind of bring these conversations out into the open. These aren't things that we need to hide anymore. These are things we should be proud of and, you know, support each other as we go through it.
This is, it's been so great. So thank you so much, Anna, for taking time out of your busy day to be here. It's been absolutely wonderful. And I know that everyone listening today will have more than one takeaway that they can use in their everyday life. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting us. We've really enjoyed talking to you.
All right. So there you have it. That is Hannah from Intercultural Transitions. And there's so much that came out of today's interview around the three things that you can do as a parent to support your own children in their coming of age as a third culture kid. And a lot of it that we've seen are core skills that will serve them well into their adult life. So if this is something that you're thinking about with your own children, I advise that you listen to this again, take notes, and then pick one key actionable item that you want to do to make sure that you're doing your part to support your transcultural kid. You've been listening to Expat Happy Hour with Sunday Bean. Thank you for listening. In the words of Lady Bird Johnson, former First Lady of the United States, encourage and support your kids because children are apt to live up to what you believe of them.
Ha ha ha!